That's the music of Tana Bachmann, one of the two voices in the performance piece The Scent of a Thousand Rains. It is the third play of a trilogy, which was first performed a couple of weeks ago at the Vista House on Mount Spokane and is being given this Thursday at the Spokane Public Library. That free 7 o'clock performance in the beautiful third-floor space, The Lens, will also be broadcast live on KPBX. 8 months ago, as the play was just in development, producer Charlie Pepitone and playwright Damon Falk got together with the two performers, actor Ryan Childers and violinist Tana Bachmann Bland, to project what might come together in this project. It has come together, possibly beyond their expectations. Let's revisit the past in order to anticipate the future.
Yeah, The Scent of a Thousand Rains is part three of a series that we just call The Memory Cycle. And that started in 2010 with The Sun is in the West, where we were playing with three braided narratives, a historian, a groundskeeper, and a photographer in a deep East Texas cemetery, and they're all pulling stories from this place. And we knit that together with a blues guitarist, who was this ghost of the cemetery, speaking through his blues guitar. In 2014 was Now at the Uncertain Hour, and that was two actors. One is a salt-of-the-earth, older man, a soldier who's recalling memories of World War II and the Battle of the Bulge and some near-mystical remembrances that he had, which were all true stories that Damon had pulled from people. And then a character of the collector, who is this poetic voice that really sort of, in a way, she spoke one sentence, it's about a 20-minute sentence, broke up over the hour, where she's culling through his memories and through the landscape, trying to come to terms of what can we take hold of that will go on and that will not be lost. And then we knit that together with a banjo player and a modular synthesizer, which aren't bits of music that normally sit well together. But the tension between the new and the old and this Americana sound of string band and more electronic music created this strong tension that worked with it. And that one was made for live performance. We performed it in an old opera house in rural upstate New York and then broadcast it over the radio. Yeah. The idea of what does it mean to be in a place if we can be any place? That was part of the question. And so this is the third. And now we're hearing, so if the question from Now at the Uncertain Hour was, what do we take hold of that can go on, that will not be lost? The Scent of a Thousand Rains poses the answer, which is, in a life of transience and loss, perhaps the only thing that we can really take hold of is our love and imagination. And so it's the third part in that.
Okay. Then that's the play that's going to be happening there. And then a lovely, unique way to cast it with two people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this one has actor Ryan Childers, who is speaking. We hear him move around in 25 years of memories, but the catalyst to these memories is this experience that this character has on a concrete balcony in Budapest, Hungary, where he looks across the corridor between apartment buildings and he sees this woman, this real woman who's both real but also imaginary to him, and she's playing a violin. And so that's Tana Bachmann Bland, who speaks through her violin. And she provokes him, and she calls to him with this music, and he moves through 25 years of memories from moments in Nepal, moments in Texas, moments in Utah, to try to come to terms with this sense of impermanence. So she's his muse, she's his love, she's his sparring partner.
She's the thing he gets to carry with them, this sort of, this person, this beautiful thing that maybe you can carry and maybe later in the process of carrying her, she will carry you.
So we'll meet them. First, him.
As for me, I would rather fall than love. I would rather fall in love with the possibility of you not loving me. If for nothing else, because possibility and not knowing remain vital. The apartment had one window in the kitchen. I drank coffee there. I leaned against the counter. I watched you on your balcony and traced the geography of trees between hems of your clothing and the city. The domes, the Danube, the chain bridge, the Buddha castle. I spoke their names aloud, not knowing what echoes I would hear. And you looked up, not with your eyes only, but with your face, like one in love, like one who has seen little of the world. Your peace, my goings, a breeze through an open window. Sunlight trellised on the kitchen floor, and I traveled to other rooms.
And her. And them.
Shoes on the Danube bank as a memorial for the Jews shot in the Arrow Cross Terror. I knew nothing of that history then. I knew Jews were shot for being Jews. I knew their bodies were dumped into the river to flush their memory away. Before they were shot, they were ordered to take off their shoes. Now iron shoes mark where they stood. In some of the shoes, candles have been lit. Children's shoes beside withering boots. Mothers beside their shivering sons.
So we've met them both, him with his words, her with her violin. I guess back to the director and the playwright, a couple of kind of practical questions. He sees her. He hears her. Is she aware of him?
not nearly as much as he is of her.
Yeah. Because she can't hear his words.
No. No. She certainly knows that she is, she becomes aware of the fact that she's sort of controlling him in a way, lovingly controlling him at times. But no, not in the same way. There are, essentially, this play is a love story, but it's an unrequited love story at that.
Well, let's go back to the actor and the violinist. Ryan, so what's it like to do such a completely different theatrical thing than I guess you've probably done?
It's a very unique experience, and it's interesting that you say it because it's something that you don't normally get a chance to do. I have workshop shows, and I have done new works, but to be able to create a play from the very start is something that it's very gratifying. Because it's as an actor, what I've described with this piece is, as an actor, I've done a lot of different shows where I've enjoyed them. Some shows have just been a paycheck. Mm-hmm. Because that's what you do as an actor, is you go where the work is and where you get hired. But you, every now and then, you find those pieces where you find a show that fills your soul. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those that it feels like it is filling my soul. It's something that I can really embrace being a storyteller.
And so within the play, I assume, I'm going to guess here, that probably we hear from the actor first and then encounter the violinist. Is that true?
Actually, at the very beginning, we hear Tana, we hear the violin first that mm-hmm. opens the piece, and then the actor that's kind of what invites the audience into the story.
And then and at the same time, I presume, invites the actor into the story,
yes,
too.
Very much so.
So Tana, this is a whole new experience for you with all your many experiences. What's it like to be acting through your violin?
Acting without speaking, without my voice, is interesting. So I'm still finding what the character does in that sense.
And you've created the music for much of this. You've written it essentially, or improvised it, and in such a way. How have you gone through that process? Just trying things?
There's a few things that we've invented, I guess we could say.
Yeah,
First of all, I have a manuscript here that uses the rhythm of Damon's play. So what I learned is poetry is written in rhythms. So I went through and wrote that rhythm down and then wrote music to the rhythm. And it just turned out that it was a very Hungarian sound, so it worked out really well. And another thing we do is we picked phrases that meant something to us out of the play, and then I wrote music to the rhythm of those phrases. And then we also wrote a song using Ryan's inflections on the rhythms.
So back to the playwright, Damon. What was your conception of her, of this woman with the violin?
A question we have is she real or is she not real? And forgive the pretentious answer, I think she's both. I think the him in the play has seen this woman, is drawn to this woman, but it's very complicated. When we are drawn to someone, even someone out of our memory, or someone across from us, actually, as she is on a balcony, in a way we begin to create them, just as they kind of create us too, but we begin to see them as we need. It's a bit like a muse, isn't it, that this muse touches us, begs us to become something, begs us to remember history, as one muse does in the classical tradition, or begs us to compose. I think the her is the force, is the thing that in a way drives the piece, or at least drives the him character to speak. Yes? To speak, because in this her is something of the imagination, hence why I said he sort of creates her. And the real, yes, that he must carry. See, when we lose things, when we lose what is beautiful, when we lose a city perhaps that we loved, when we lose someone maybe who is dear to us, in many ways that people can be dear to us, we know this is inevitable, but then we do go. And I think we have to ask ourselves, what is left? What are we carrying with us? Because you're carrying something. Hopefully, you're carrying something. And I think the Hymn character is in a position where he is reviewing, not educating us about, but speaking what he has carried. And it is this her that has drawn this out the most. And once this happens, she will go with him also.
So you've really gone to the depths. I mean, you plural, the depths of what music is, what songs are, what poetry is, what everything.
Yeah, and the play began as about a 35-page book length poem. So the verse and the rhythm is there's a real structure that Damon gave us that we've been able to work in.
I also was able to email Damon and ask him what his favorite music was, and it helped me offshoot the styles of the different places that he lives in the story and how I could add jazz or Hungarian music or Jewish music. So it was really helpful for me to hear what Damon liked.
So Damon, talk a little bit more about those musical styles.
Yeah, in the email exchange, I talked a little bit about my father, who gave me, in a sense, a choice of music when I was a very little boy. And the two albums I carried away were Rossini's William Tell Overture. And then he brought me an album called The Giants of Jazz. And it was Sonny Stitt, Thelonious Monk, Dizzy Gillespie, playing this wonderful music. And the piece that came away from that in particular was Everything Happens to Me, a really wonderful jazz tune, done many, many times, many ways. And so about 7 years old, my father got me these albums, and I just went on listening. Another one was Duke Ellington, Live from the Cotton Club, the little song, Three Little Words, wonderful piece. And this began to broaden. Oddly enough, though, I pretty much stayed so far in my listening life in the realms of classical music, particularly Baroque music, say, from Bach, and jazz music. Music touches us in a different way. Music touches something we can't quite reach with words. I write. I love words. I think words have a certain power that captures us. But music goes deeper than words.
If you're just joining us, all of these deep thoughts about music and words and rhythms and inflections and all this stuff has to do with this play, Scent of a Thousand Rains, in which the two characters are an actor with words and a violinist with her violin. And so back to Charlie, the producer and director, as if this weren't enough, you're taking it to a mountaintop.
Yeah, there's always got to be a third thing when I'm doing work, especially new work. And what I mean by the third thing always has to sort of bend the rest of it into a creative space that creates challenges to solve. And a space is a great way to do that. So we're going to be premiering this at the Vista House on top of Mount Spokane. And the play really plays with some of what we inherit from ancient theater. And I'm thinking Homer, truly, truly ancient theater, where the people would leave a city, the din of all of the hubbub of the city center. They'd go some distance out into the wilderness or to a mountaintop. They would experience a poem, some music, have this sense of shared catharsis or shared emotion, and then they'd come back to the city with that knowledge. And it's that process of transformation that happens through that. How could we do that today? It feels like we're at a moment where we could use a little unity and transformation. Where's our apex? Where's our moment? So 23 miles northeast of us is Mount Spokane in this beautiful Vista House. Stone construction, It was made in the 30s from this civilian conservation corps style. And the point is the construction should look like it emerges from the landscape. And so for everybody who's been to the Vista House, it's what it looks like. Beautiful, large, open fireplace, flagstone, granite floors, and it just looks like it's always been there since the mountain was built. Mm-hmm. And so this performance, the idea is that the performance should feel like it just emerges from that space as well. So the audience will come there together and be there in time for sunset. The show will start just after sunset, 60 minutes, and then they'll leave that mountain together to come back after having heard these stories.
The Scent of a Thousand Rains by Damon Falk, who's been with us in this conversation, and also Ryan Childers and Tana Bachman-Bland and you, Charlie Pepitone. Sounds like a fabulous project. Producer Charlie Pepitone was just speaking about those first two performances, which ended up happening on September 13th and 14th. Now the play has come down off the mountain and will be given a single performance at the Lens, the third floor performance space at the Spokane Public Library, while also being broadcast live on KPBX. That event is 2 days hence, this Thursday, October 3rd at 7 o'clock. Due to Spokane Arts Grant Awards funding, there is no admission charge.